All right, welcome to the 17th episode of our podcast, Up on Foil, where we talk all about foiling. And we have a special guest today. It's Julia Castro, or Fuerte Julia. She was born on Fuerteventura, where most people just go on vacation. She's a kiteboarder and professional waterwoman and a community manager. And we got the hint from Lucas at Foil Only that we had on a couple of episodes ago that we have to talk to you because you have a lot of stories to tell. Insta is full of amazing stories, and I'm really, really looking forward to hearing these stories. Thank you, Julia, for taking your time. Is there anything I forgot or you want to add?
No, so far, good presentation. Thank you very much. I'm honored to be here. Thanks to Lucas for telling you guys about me.
This is so cool. Maybe we can just start by that you are somewhere. You live somewhere where people just go on vacation. I've been there maybe 10 times already, but it's a little pathetic just at one place. How is that for you, a local in a vacation spot?
Yeah, it's changed during the years. Like, I don't know, 10 years ago, it was different. We were not so many people. There were tourists coming, but it was not like now. Now we have a lot of people. Like, it's a lot more, and it's a bit stressful on the water because maybe sometimes 10 years ago, you could go alone on the water with a friend or two, and now you're fighting with another 60 people in the water for some waves. So, yeah, it's water-wise, it's interesting. And then living here, I mean, I don't know anything else, so I guess I'm used. But yeah, it's complicated in the water these days.
How is it complicated? Do you get in fights? Do you get in arguments?
The feeling I have is that there is a lot of people that don't really know the rules, especially when there is waves, right? When there's no waves, well, whatever. But when there is waves, a lot of people don't know the rules. A lot of people is really hungry because they didn't get a single wave in the whole year. And they come and they just go for it. Doesn't matter who's in the wave, who has the right, like, doesn't matter.
So waves, let's take that for as an educational part. What are these rules?
Eventually, for example, when somebody's coming, where's the wave? This is the wave. When somebody's coming on the wave, you have to move. Like if the wave is going this way, you move this way. If the wave is coming that way, you move away. You move out of the way because somebody's enjoying a wave. Let them enjoy. That's, for example, number one. Because now, before, you get the wave and you go out here in a circle and then everything is nice. People want to get more and more and more waves. So they just cross like this and then, okay. That's not ideal, but if you want to do it, move out of the way, for example. Well, that would be first one. And, you know, everybody's going out and there's a wave coming. So who is going on that wave, right? Whoever turns first on the wave or whoever is deeper on the wave. Like if I'm not so deep, but I turn first, it's my wave. Please, everybody, move. Don't come with me. I'm not going to fall. Like, don't try and steal it. If you turn, you turn. And yeah, some people these days, I see them, you're coming with a wave from far away, fighting to stay on. You know, it's a little bump and you know it's going to get big. And then when it's just super nice and perfect, somebody's like, I turn. It's my wave. No, man, I'm following this. I'm fighting with it since a long time. So I would say those two are the main ones. When you're on windy sports, right, because you're moving, then surfing, it's a bit different.
Has that changed at all when the foils came into play?
Yeah, like we have more people in the water because a normal day here would be windsurfers. They have the priority because they're slower, although they're a bit painful because sometimes they don't move. They stay on the spot waiting for the wave. Oh, I like that. No, I don't like this one. I go on the next one. But okay, windsurfers are supposed to go first. And then in between kites and wings, we don't really know. Wings are way faster to turn on the waves than kiters, really. So, there's a lot more people in the water, a lot more lines and boards and things.
And what it's do you go for usually? So since you are an experienced kite surfer and whatnot, now you are fully into wing foiling.
Yeah, I do everything but windsurfing. I don't fit the toys in my house. I have enough toys. But if there is if it's not such a big day, I would go on my wing as as big as I feel comfortable. And once it gets too big, I go on my kite. And if there's no wind, then it would be foil driving or stand up paddle, or chilling on the beach also works sometimes. So,
yeah. Where in Fuerteventura are you located?
I was born in the hospital, right? But I was raised in Morro Cable, so in the edge south of the island. And since a few years now, I live in Corralejo. Because it's so exposed, it's round like this, so we get wind and waves from all directions, a little bit better for water sporting.
So you're all the way in the north now?
Yeah, I can see Lanzarote from home. I have a few spots around my home, and it's starting to be windy right now.
We don't want to hold you back too long. Do you ever, if we talk about the island, do you ever go on other spots as well? Or you just stay in Corralejo because it's awesome there?
No, it's, because the island is so exposed, it changes a lot. Like if the waves change a little bit direction or the wind does, you have to move a lot. It's not like we have a million spots, but we have a few. And I move. I always try to find the least amount of people in a spot. So crowded, yeah, I move around.
So we said in the intro that you do a lot of kiteboarding, and it says you're a professional water woman, and I see your images, your pictures, crazy things you do. So follow her, that's for sure. But what is a professional water woman anyway?
Yeah, this is a term I came up with a couple of years ago because I've not been competing for the last 3 years, I think. And I try and do all the water sports possible. So I get money from my sponsors to go on the water and try and do videos because it's not always easy here in Fuerteventura. And I guess that's my job now. A part of the community manager you mentioned before, I always wanted to have a plan B if I get injured or if I get bored or, you know, an asteroid comes, I don't know. So plan B was my sport events and community manager, yeah.
Let's go just in that second part of your life. How, if you compare these two, how much are you a water woman and how much are you a self-employed community manager and doing all sorts of things?
Yeah, it depends. There's months where I don't see a wing or a kite because maybe there's two or three events, so there's no water for me, which is very sad. And then there's other months where I only go on the water. I don't touch my phone or laptop or I try. So it varies a lot, it changes, and I am definitely trying to be on the water as much as possible because I get dry. It's not a nice feeling.
And it's always you give clinics as well on the water?
Sometimes. I try and do one every year, and I try to do women only actually because I've realized with the time that most women feel a little bit more comfortable if they're around other women. And if they have a woman teaching them, and so far it's been a really cool experience because maybe Anna is coming and she wants to do a triple back roll, but then you actually see her level and it turns out maybe she has to start doing one back roll and not being afraid of crossing another person in the water. And in the end, I teach them a lot about being sure in the water and daring to do stuff and just feeling comfortable, you know? And so at the end of the day, you have a group of strong women who know their way and know their right, and they don't stop when somebody crosses. So that's super cool. I like it.
We had Anna Ambrosiak on the last episode, Foil.Anna. I don't know if you know about her. She's stationed in Perth. And she said that it's very different if you work with women as well. And sometimes she hears the sentence, you write pretty well for a woman. Have you ever heard that or had problems like that?
I guess my funny story on that would be that a lot of times when I go on the water, guys try to do tricks in front of you, you know, to impress me. I'm like, good job, man. Keep trying. I don't know. People still a lot my ways. It's not like people here, the tourists, we are not so many locals, but tourists are not so supporting, let's say. Like you go for the big wave of the set and they try to take it from you. It's like, man, like, come on. But yeah, we keep fighting and we're there. We're not so many on the water, but trying. I guess that's part of my mission, right? Getting more girls on the water.
For sure. And I wanted to ask you, do you have some like secret spots? Because I know that, for example, here, there are people that they have like secret spots. And if you go there and you talk about that spot, then they won't talk to you anymore. Do you have like such thing in Tenerife as well?
Yeah. For example, don't worry. It's the same in all the Canary Islands. We do have... That's my dog who wants to play. Guys, what the time now? We do have localism a lot, especially in surfing. And I do have secret spots. I would actually say it's only me allowed in there. Everybody else would get, I don't know what. But yeah, people... I somehow understand, you know, I don't like it. I don't like localism, but I understand it. Because once again, there's nice waves. You, tourist, has not taken a single wave in the whole year, but I've been waiting for those conditions the whole year. So yeah, we have to get a bit nasty sometimes just to be able to take a few waves, you know. And perfect. There's not so many secret spots. There is. And yeah, I'm going there sometimes. I went there the other day. I won't say where, of course. But yeah, if you say where, it stops being a secret spot, you know?
For sure.
Even here, sometimes when we get the special conditions, right? People straight away go and post on social media. I'm like, dude, but just post it in a week so people will know forecast nice conditions, you know, that they don't put it together. But yeah, no.
For sure. Okay. And I guess we all want to know a bit about your backstory. Because you were born in an island, so I guess that you started pretty early with water sports, don't you?
Actually, not. I always get this question, and if you come here, it will be very difficult to meet a local. Like, wing foiling, I'm really one of the only ones. We are not more than 10 locals. And kiteboarding, maybe 20. But everybody else here are tourists. They come and go. And I started kiting when I was 17. So... super old, really, compared to all my friends, you know, who started when they were 10 or 8, stuff like this. And winging, I started when in the beginning, but I was already 20-something, I don't know. So, yeah, I was late. What about you guys? When did you start?
Pretty well, I started sailing when I was 6, so I was pretty early.
Not one, definitely. No, yeah, I just started it really a couple of years ago, not more than that. I wasn't really doing anything in the water. Also because I was living, just like Matt, pretty far from any sort of windy spots and stuff like that. Not as lucky probably as you. And in general, how was the life there as a kid? Because I had a taste, but I guess it's different. Do you feel like you're missing something, or completely the opposite? You feel like you're blessed because you're living in such a beautiful place.
So when I was a kid, I didn't realize, for me, it was normal. This is where I was born and I didn't know anything else. There was no social media. So you could also, it's not like you could compare, you know, to other places. So it was just normal. But now that I'm a grown up, I realize that it is difficult to be born here, especially if you're not rich, you know. And I mean, yeah, 30 years ago, there was not so many sports to do. Surfing was not an option. Kitesurfing was not an option. It was too expensive for us. It was a sport for tourists. And the schools are not great. The hospital is there, but again, it's not great. So yeah, now when I'm a grown up, I realize how difficult it is to get out of here. And then, yeah, once you're an adult and you come back and you can enjoy and you come back with your money and your salary and your toys, then it's the best island in the world, I think. Well, I don't have to say that. Hawaii. Everybody go to Hawaii. But yeah, I mean, as a kid, it's difficult. And then once you're grown up, it's like, wow, this is great. But everybody goes away here. Like, our future is outside. We all leave when we are 16, 17. It's like, okay, bye, go find my future.
Yeah. Did you go away for some studies as well and came back?
We all do. Like, if you want to study, you have to go away because in Fuerte, there is no university. There's uni in Gran Canaria and Tenerife. So if you're from any other island, you have to go. And yeah, I left when I was 17. I left to close to Tarifa because back then it was where the center of the world in kitesurfing, right? It was in Tarifa and all the pros were there. So I went close because I could study and be close to Tarifa. And once I finished my studies, it was like a 2-year professional study. Then I went on and on and on. I tried university in Denmark, but as you could imagine, very cold, not a lot of water hours. So back then I was wakeboarding and kitesurfing. I was not doing the water sporty part. And doing two sports professionally plus uni was a bit too much. So I decided to focus on water.
And I guess you did right. And how was the transition between, from kitesurfing to foiling? Was it super, super different? We always ask this question, but it's always curious to hear different feelings. Some people are like, one week I did it. And other people are like, no, it was completely different. What's your experience?
So I knew how to foil from kiting, not since the very beginning, but once it started to get commercial, I tried foiling. I was like, oh, this is cool. I like that. And then winging came along and I'm like, what is this toy? Why do they invent these things, right? And the U-turn gave me some gear. But I have to admit, it was very small for starting. I had like a 55 liter board, which now is my favorite. So I started with a very small board and a 1500 foil, like the brand came out with, right? And I think it took me a very good week to learn going up and down the rocks because we have a lot of rocks here. So my feet were all cut and my knees were bleeding from the pad from going up and down. And of course, they tell you, no, it's a... it's not so windy, you can go winging. That's not true. When you learn, you need, 18 knots for sure if you want to have it a bit more easy. So I did go on a lot of under 16 knots days. Learned the hard way.
But you stuck to it. Like, yeah. I want to learn that.
Yeah. I was determined. Like, I need to learn this thing. And I spent a full week of cutting my feet, going up and down the beach. And like, I learned this. And once I went up the board, I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. And once I was up on the foil, the progression was fast. But until then, like a week is a lot for me. I usually learn quick, I think. And winging was like, oh my God, why am I doing this? But now I love it. So yeah, it's a lovely relationship.
And what's next?
What's next? I did try the Powerwing. I was like, okay, why do they keep inventing things? Stop. But I did try it. It was very windy. I can understand for certain spots it may be interesting. For Fuerteventura, I don't see it. Maybe in a couple of years, I'm the Powerwing lady, but for the moment, I tried it. It was okay. I love my wing, I stick with my wing.
So no paddles, no 8-foot boards and stuff for now.
So I would like to start downwind foiling. Yes. Okay. I admit, especially having the foil drive, I think it would be such a help, so I'm not paddling and dying, but I can maybe go upwind with my foil drive and goodbye. I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking where to put it also, where to store it, it's...
I imagine your boards and your background are not there usually. It's just for recording.
This one is always here. It's reminding me that I need to get... It's the big wave board. So it's there like big waves are coming. Don't forget they're coming. And then the wing board, I put it there on purpose. Yes.
Nice. Very nice. You do so many different sports and you're excelling in most of them. As it looks like, if you could pick the place, the conditions, what would you pick and what would you do?
Let's say there's, I think, up to 3-meter waves, something like that. I would go winging if it's 16, 18 knots, something like that. But then once it gets bigger, I go kite for sure. Like it's, not fun when you crash in a big wave on the wing. Like I haven't had it too bad. The other day I drank a little bit of water, actually. But yeah, if it's more than 18 knots, then I can go with my 7-meter kite and a nice surfboard. Then I go kiting. And of course, if there's no wind, I can choose or foil drive or the stand-up paddle. Surfing, I don't surf so much anymore because there's too many people in the water. So with the paddle, I can go way more back and be a bit more alone, and with the foil drive, even further. So,
and you can steal the waves for the surfers.
Bye. Yeah, I try not to get close to people,
the shore,
especially with the foil, right? Because, I mean, I can become sushi, but I don't want to make anyone else become sushi. It would be my nightmare. So
I had kind of like the same experience. I was surfing. I was learning how to surf with the foil drive, and I was in this spot, and just like there, probably there are a few spots, a few days. So when the conditions are good, everybody's there, right? And I knew that people, I don't know, maybe are not always happy to see a foiler. So I went out because you can go out. And then I was keeping like at 20 meters, a good solid 20, 15 meters distance from everybody else. And then a girl shouting me, go away with that motor. like, relax. But yeah, I know.
But honestly,
I know what you mean.
I understand that having a motor gives a different vibe to the whole thing.
People don't even realize, I have to say, like they just look at you like, what is she doing? Like they didn't understand. And actually most people, that's different when I foil, when I wing foil, when they see me on a foil, they're like, wow, that's pretty cool. Also because I go on a 90 mast, it's way longer than an 82. So it's like, you're all big up there, right? So people is more impressed than when you go winging. But yeah, I try to go away from people. Also when I'm somewhere alone and they come, I'm like, hello. I turn my board around. I'm like, listen, this thing cuts a lot. Then have this little propeller. It also cuts a lot. I was here alone. Like, why don't you go down there? Like, I don't want to have an accident. I'm learning. I always tell people I'm learning. So, you know, let's give each other space. Talking in the end, you understand each other, right? But we have to be careful. We have stuff that cuts. And people need to understand that as well, that there is water for everyone. And if I'm out there alone, maybe there is a reason, you know?
Like, and did you ever add incidents since you are on the topic?
Not with the foil, not with the wing. Kiting people crashing me a lot. Just the other day, somebody just went on me, and luckily the wind was dropping, so nothing bad happened. But it's like, really, man? But no, nothing bad with people, actually. I've heard about collisions and stuff, but I tried to look around.
Yeah, you can look around. You're obviously a pro. If you look at your pictures and films, I'm an okay kiter, but I stopped kiting because I'm kind of scared of these lines. Not mine, but the other ones. And that's my problem because I didn't kite that much. I don't see if someone is not that good. When they go straight in a straight line, I cannot see if they're good or not. And that's my problem because I always think they're probably not good. I leave a little bit, and then I'm always evacuating, and that sucks. So I sold my stuff.
Oh, that's sad. Yeah, I mean, kite surfing, I have the feeling that winging, people, or you know or you don't, right? There's no space for the people who don't know somehow. Like, you have to know to be on the waves. If not, you're just back there in the somewhere else. But with the kite, you can be out there and not have a lot of ideas. So yeah, you're right. You should come back because it's super fun.
You know, on Fuerteventura, I actually would kite again, but here in Switzerland, first of all, it's forbidden at most of the places. And if you're allowed to go out, you have trees, you have very narrow entries to the lakes. And that's, again, super uncomfortable. And that's the advantage of the wing, where you can just like hold your gear.
So like spots where it's forbidden, not here, you can go winging. Because people don't even know what it is, and then you're just throwing your stuff on the water from a rock or from wherever, then you can go, yeah.
I'm on a picture of you riding a huge wave with the surfboard and the kite. Have you ever had to exit a wave where you got swallowed and you just pull your kite and shoot it out?
I always try to keep my equipment at any cost. Because if you're on a huge wave and you let go of your stuff, then you're a little person floating, getting around the washing machine. So if you have something that floats with you, Yeah, I do have a reel actually that I'm not dying by this, just going on the edge of the wave like a ninja, literally. No, but I've never had to let go of my stuff.
These videos, when did you decide to start filming yourself? And for this example, who filmed that? Was that luck or do you have someone who's always pointed camera at you?
I'm so sad that it didn't start earlier, to be honest, because I've had epic, epic, epic days. And I don't have a single photo, a single video, because it was not the social media era when you had to film everything. And, you know, I was just going out and enjoying this wonderful, great, amazing day. But no, here in Fuerte, you have to have everything space perfectly lined up, because it's not like people is out there and they shoot videos. You have to call them, be like, hey, let's go. Maybe you go and there's not a single wave or the wind died. So it's not easy here. I have the feeling like in so many, in Hawaii, you go out and you have 20 million videos and photos and the helicopter and the jet ski. Here, yeah, you better be ready, because if not, that day I called Tom. I was like, hey, man, I think there's waves. You want to call? And then he was available, because sometimes people travel, but they have other jobs. So it's difficult now on this social media thing, always filming.
And do you sometimes say like, okay, today I will not film anything because I want to enjoy the time in the water?
Yeah, a lot. And I mean, yeah, it's always the thing, right? Do I bring the GoPro out at least or not? If there's somebody filming outside, it's much easier, right? You're outside and whatever, you can change the battery. I'm paying you, so you have to stay there. But do I bring the GoPro out or not, or whatever camera? Like, then it's going to be annoying. You have to stick it somewhere. You can lose it. The battery is gone.
Yeah, it's not the same freedom. Yeah.
No.
So but, how
well,
do you balance that?
If it's a good session and you got good videos or photos, like, okay, it was worth it. Yeah. But yeah, many days I go out without nothing and then I end up regretting. But, you know, I'm also a person, not only a person with a camera in the hand. So I think you guys know the feeling. I see it in your faces.
Yeah, 100%. And then you lose it. Yeah, it's always the same story.
The worst thing actually happened to me. I pressed record and it didn't. And it was one of the best sessions. And I have never had a session like that before. Then when I come home and wanted just to show my kids, my wife, look, it looked like this. And there was nothing. So that's that happens. But then you eventually started to record things. And if I scroll through your Instagram, there's one image where you're in a hospital bed and there's a Spanish caption. Can you tell us what happened there?
Yeah, so I've been in the hospital a lot because I've broken everything. Water sports, you know. But this one was special because last year, actually before now, like October, November, I was feeling so bad. Like I was just so tired. If I went winging, I could go for 20 minutes and I was exhausted, like so tired. Then I would go to the hospital. They would send me back like, no, but look at you. You're so strong and your blood test is amazing. I'm like, okay, but if I walk the dog, it's not tiring. It's just exhausting. So I would go over and over and over and they would tell me, no, you're good. You're perfect. Okay. Well, they know what they're saying, right? And then I was very, very, very lucky. So lucky. Thank you, body, for taking care of me. But then my period came. And it normally it's a week. You guys should know about periods. You have kids. So a period is a week. I'm also not ashamed to talk about periods. Every woman has it. So no shame here. But it's supposed to be there for a week. And it didn't go for 3 weeks. 3 weeks like that. So I did go. I have private insurance. Thanks God. Because in Spain, public is funny. So this doctor lady, she did all the tests. She was so nice. And 2 days later, she calls me and she's like, hey, don't be afraid, but you should come to the clinic. Oh, can I come tomorrow? No, you come now. And yeah, then she told me that I was lucky that we caught it now, because I had a beginning of cancer, uterus cancer. And normally it kills you before you know. Like when you realize you have something, you're dying. So yeah, then I had to do a bunch more tests, which were very painful, I have to admit. Then I got the surgery where they removed a piece. And yeah, it was a very strong decision if I wanted to make it public or not. But then I started to ask my girlfriends around me and the friends of my friends, all girls, right? Like, when was the last time you went to the gynecologist? Never. 8 years ago. A lot of time ago. And then I thought, okay, this cancer of mine is really easy to prevent. You just need to go to your gynecologist once a year. And if once every year, it's very difficult that in 1 year you're going to go up in the sky, right? So then it's when I decided, okay, I make this public. I tell my very personal story and I try to encourage women and men to tell their women to go to the hospital. And you will ask, where am I now? So I had my test done, my 6 months test a few months ago. And I was expecting they're going to tell me I'm free and I'm good to go and see you, sayonara, baby. But it was not like that. They told me I'm still with the... Because it's caused by a fucking virus. Beep. And the virus still not out of my body, still there. Which is strange because I'm supposed to be strong and healthy. But it's still roaming around. And then I have more tests in 3 months, I think, to see if it went away or not. But I'm feeling good. I go in the water and tell you women to go to the gynecologist. It's super easy. It saves your life.
Public announcement, super important. I'm really sorry to hear that. Did that change your way of life in any sorts?
Yeah. Because, I started thinking about everything, like the way I sleep, the way I eat. So I went to a specialist nutritionist. Is that what you call it? And she changed my whole diet. She took away a bunch of she took away the whole gluten. She actually took away a lot of fruits because fruits has a lot of sugar and it's not good for cancer. Even fruits, not all the fruits, but most of them. And she took away a lot of meat. And yeah, that was the main thing I did, my whole food situation. And then I think I started complaining a lot less because I used to not be negative, but complain a lot, you know, for some reason. And I don't know, I started to appreciate people a lot more. And every single thing I do is like, I really appreciate it. Like, for some people, maybe they're recording a podcast, but I'm really mega stoked to be here because I could have not been here. So I don't know, you learn to appreciate stuff a lot more and you realize how easy it is to just be like, goodbye, gone forever.
100%. Yeah. And it's also like, what you are doing, like living the life as you want and not as someone else tells you to. So I think you're doing great.
This is something I have to say. My parents told me since very young, like my mom always told me, your job has to be your hobby. Your job has to be your hobby. And I was lucky that was introduced in my brain since very young. So I've always tried to do stuff that I'm happy, like, I don't go to a shitty job in the office 8-12 hours. I am not a millionaire, but I do what I love, you know? And then this whole cancer thing, there was not a single moment where I was sad and like, oh, life, why do you do this to me? I was like, okay, what do I need to do to get this away? What can I do to help other people? And let's move forward, you know? I didn't want to be like, poor me. Like, I also didn't tell a lot of people until I had the surgery, because I didn't want the pity. Like, oh, poor Julia, what now? I'm like, no, it's all good. Just let's go forward. Let's get this over with. And yeah, it was funny when I had to tell my sponsors, though, because at some point they called me for a meeting and I'm like, all of the brands, like it's Duotone, it has like Boys and More, so it's Ion, Fanatic, Duotone, right? And they called me up for a meeting, all of them together. And I'm like, I'm going to get kicked out. I have not been in the water so much. I didn't say anything. I was posting all stuff. They know it's all stuff. Like, now I need to tell them. So they're like, hey, Julia, like, thanks for your time. Like, we first want to tell you that we are very happy with your job. Like, don't worry. Like, okay. But we were wondering why you're not so active these days. Like, can we help you somehow? And I was like, okay, guys, I need to tell you this, like, don't panic, it's all good. But yeah, it was a funny moment because you could see a bit like your faces, you know, like, oh my God, I'm like, but I'm okay, it's going to be okay. I'm going to have my surgery next month. And, but yeah,
How did they react?
I mean, it's strong, right? Because now you see the picture and you can read through it. But back then I had said nothing. And I looked like now, I didn't look like dead or something. Like, you couldn't tell from my looks. They were a little bit shocked, I have to say. And yeah, of course, worried. Like, I've been many, many years with the brand already. So, I mean, I know them and we text weekly, you know. So they were like, wow, this is, yeah, we're so sorry for you. But I have to say that I'm stoked because they didn't take away one single euro from my salary or one kite or one wing. Like, everything stayed exactly like it was. And there was never a question about it. Like, they never said, like, oh, we need to take away something because you're not producing. Like, so yeah, thank you guys for that.
And that is amazing.
Maybe on these notes, and moving on to more light topics, let's call it. How did you get sponsors, and how did you actually transform your passion into a job? Because that's probably what people are here for, right?
The big question, yeah. Yeah, it was not an easy journey because, again, Fuerteventura, back then there was two shops here. Now there's a trillion schools and shops, but back then it was two. And one of them, there was not even a question that I could go and ask if they helped me. And the other one, I went. I was like, hey, Julia, I want to compete, but, you know, I need kites and I don't have a lot of money, so maybe you can help me. And they said, okay, you come back when you do this and this and this trick, you come back and we help you out. So in the meanwhile, I started competing already. Like, I started, after a year of kiting, I started competing, and I was in Tarifa, and I was not ashamed because I was like, or I ask or I stay where I am, right? So I went to Tarifa to the Duoton shop, which back then was North, and then there was the whole name change and everything, but the Duoton now. And I just went there like, hey, I'm Julia, I want to compete. Can you help me? And in the beginning they said no. They said yes, but no. They said, okay, you can buy the gear 50% and you're sponsored by Duoton Spain. And I was like, thank you, but I don't have money, you know, not even for 50%. And a week later, they called me back and they're like, look, I talked with the boss and we give you the gear. You give it back at the end of the season, but you can go competing. I was like, so everything started a little bit like that. And back then there was no Instagram. It was only Facebook and Twitter, but Twitter was not my thing. So I just started telling my adventures on Facebook, you know, like, oh, today I hitchhiked 200 kilometers to go kiting. And then this thing happened. I ended up here. And I don't know, just really telling my day to day, and which for me was nothing special. It was just my day to day, but I was putting it up on the internet. And yeah, I guess with everyone, people started to follow along, and here we are. So a bit like that, I was never shy to go and ask for help because I needed it. So, yeah.
Plus, you're helping them out as well.
I realized with the time, but back then I was like, please help me. I try to do the best for you. But I was, it was different because social media, now you can measure how important you are for a brand, right? But back then, it was different. It was just different. We helped. I mean, it's a job we do together. Win-win, it's not that they like people say, no, but you get free gear. I'm like, I don't get free gear. I break my whole body, like, to do photos and videos and compete. And, you know, it's people like, how do you get free gear? If only.
Where to put that gear, right?
Yeah, luckily that's my biggest problem, but that's a good problem.
Exactly. What would you suggest?
What would you
suggest to someone now? Let's say you of the past, like young Julia, now wants to get a sponsor.
So I think now, maybe you guys agree or not, but I think now it's much easier and much more difficult. Much easier because there's cameras everywhere. And if you don't have a camera, a friend has a camera, and or your phone, you can film a really cool video with your phone. So if you want to show that you do something cool, that you do something different, because at the end you have to, well, I like to think that you have to give something. No, you can, as a girl, you can show your ass and your boobs and that's about it. But but I like to think I can give something and be a bit different, right? And so, yeah, you first have to think, what can you give? Why are you different? Why is your video going to be different than all the 100 million videos that are on the internet? And then once you realize what you can give to the community or to the world, you explode that. And you film every second or not. But yeah, put it out there on the gram. But yeah, learning what you're good at, what you're different at, and putting it out there, I think that would be my I don't know English now. My tip.
Yeah,
my tip.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Give first, and then they will come. Yeah, totally agree.
Can I ask you about collabs, or maybe also how you work with others? Because of course it's easier now because internet and stuff, but still you're on this island. Are you, when you met Lucas, for example, you probably got a call from Foil Drive or something. How did that work? How do you work together with other content creators or companies? You wait for them to show up, or are you still like, oh, I want to try this product. Let me ask them if I can use it.
Yeah, there is a million different ways. I have to say I travel a lot. I'm not home a lot, good or bad, because I miss a lot of good conditions. But I travel a lot, so that helps to meet people and be in the right place in the right moment. But then Lucas, for example, I had seen his mega viral videos on the internet, right? But I had never met him in person. Then Foil Drive said, okay, let's go shoot in Tenerife. And there's these other people going to be there. And yeah, it's super cool because before, to meet people, you had to travel, go to a competition. And there's where you meet the people, right? Because if you go to a spot, maybe you go in the morning, I go in the afternoon, and we just don't meet. But yeah, meeting Lucas was super funny because he wants to be in the water all the time. And I don't know, he has a lot of different foils for different things. And of course, he has a different approach to mine. Like all his foils, they don't even fit on the screen. They're huge. And all my foils are like babies compared to him because I do more wave stuff. So yeah, I loved to be around him and all the passion he has for foiling and downwinding. And I save a lot more of my energy, you know. I look for the right condition, for the right wave, and they're like, we go in the water every day, all the time. It's like such a different approach. I love it.
All right. Cool. I'm pretty much done with my list. You already told us what's next will be a downwind foiling.
That's my
like
next adventure.
Downwind. Are you going to do that with Foil Drive, or are you going to really paddle?
I'm going to start with Foil Drive, 100%. Because if I have this beautiful, amazing toy, why not use it? Like, it makes life so much easier, really. And I love stand-up paddling, so I will try the hard way too. But once I get the hang of it first, right? Like if I have the tool and it can help me. But then I will tell you also that for next year, I have a documentary planned. Like I want to film a documentary.
Oh, wow. Cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all coming along and having a bunch of meetings and sponsors and, like you said, approaching, some approach me, telling them about the doc. So, yeah, I hope I can show you next year.
Can you tell us about it? Is it going to be a documentary about you, about the sport? How is it going to look like?
It's a bit of a mix because I always wanted to have an excuse to tell my story. But like we were saying before, why is my story different to anyone else's, right? So I needed something to go with it. And I guess that's as much as I can say, because if not, I tell you all about it and you don't want to watch it. But it's a mix in between an adventure I'm going to do and my story, as you say, being born in this beautiful island, but as a kid is very difficult. And when you think the story is about to finish, something happens. And yeah, it ends up very different to what you would think, I hope.
And we can probably see whenever that airs somewhere on your Instagram, I guess.
I will Instagram will be the last thing to go online. Like I'm expecting to bring it to festivals and, you know, go a bit around it on the offline world, like where people actually sit and watch a big screen with other people, old school style. Mm-hmm. And then once it's everywhere, hopefully going far away, then we put it on the internet.
But I mean, so, like publicity wise, you're going to probably say where we can watch it on your Instagram.
Yeah. For sure. On my gram, once it's out, hopefully I can bring it to Switzerland as well. You know, do a little screening
yes,
there,
please.
Invite some people, bring some popcorn and... Yeah,
that would be super nice. I would highly appreciate it.
Crossing fingers.
Cool. So cool. Unless you have something else to add besides this little secret, we can wrap it.
Next year again, one more year without competing, which is a really hard decision for me because I love competing. I love it. But I will focus on the documentary. And yeah, we've talked a lot on so many things. I've had questions I've never had before, which is difficult after so many years. So thank you guys for that.
Thank you for the compliment, I guess.
Maybe you can use some things in your documentary.
Some ideas.
All right.
Cool.
Well, thank you very much, Julia, for coming.
Thank you very much,
and before we wrap it up, before you said Julia, is it Julia or Julia?
As long as you don't say Julia, I don't care. Like, my ears hear the same pretty much. So my mom is from Denmark. She's not from Fuerte. And in Denmark, they don't say Juan, Jose, Julia. We don't have that sound. So she had the fantastic idea in a Julia country to call me Julia. And yeah, as long as you don't say Julia, say it the way you want. I don't care.
But you say Julia.
I guess so. I don't really hear myself, but.
All right. So thank you very much, Julia. Can find all her amazing videos and pictures on @FuerteJulia on Instagram. You find Gael stuff on @GaelDaniele. It was super nice. Thank you very much for coming on the show. The next episode is going to be a great one again. It's going to be with Nicola Eaton. I don't know if you've heard from him. He had the pump foil world record, 4 hours and 2 minutes, 54 kilometers of nonstop pump foiling. So
I am going to look him up now. What is that?
Yeah, where that is crazy.
From
he's an inline skater, like a marathon inline skater, and he does it so easily. Really great talk about technique and endurance and just how he does it with the family and whatnot. Really cool. So look out for that as well. It's going to be out next week. Thank you very much, Julia. Thank you, Gael, and all the listeners, viewers. See you in the next one.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.